I'm trying to do is just meet some depth of people. And I suppose just talking a bit about who they are, what they make of Deptford and their life in Deptford. A bit, I suppose, about the different communities that make up Deptford and how they relate to those communities and how they perceive those communities relate to each other. A bit about the relationship with the council. A bit about their sense of the future of Deptford and how they might like Deptford to evolve.
Do you expect there to be a sort of common thread of Deptfordness, as it were?
Well, I've so far just anecdotally found it to be it's very
very diverse.
Obviously, there are common threads in a way, but people's perception of those threads is quite distinct, depending where you stand in the landscape of your own life. And I talked to a Vietnamese girl who was a second generation migrant. I don't know if she was born here or not, but anyway, went to school here, and she's been working in a Vietnamese cafe, waitressing for her parents. She wants to be a beautician, basically.
Yeah, printing jobs there.
Not nail bars. She's got bigger aspirations than that. But I was asking her a little bit about that, and as far as she was concerned, it was all lovely and fine, and the Vietnamese community, as far as she's concerned, seems to be quite tight, quite well integrated. Her own concerns were a little bit about crime, a little bit about nuisance and slightly aggressive behaviour from perhaps some of the youth culture. But otherwise she seemed to be quite simply focused on her work and her aspirations, and there wasn't, when I mentioned the council, she just didn't have anything to say at all. There was someone you paid your bills to, basically.
Yeah.
So that was a very enclosed and reasonably content view of Deptford, I suppose. I talked to a girl over the road who's Somali and similar age, a bit more lost. She'd ended up going to London College of Printing and doing a fine arts and book art degree.
Oh, right.
And actually very articulate and she had a nice sense about her, of calm and quite involved in the Somali community, but clearly she was someone who was very much more in his own transition culturally, having various different identities in a way, and being clearly her friends and who she was with them was very distinct to what she was with her parents and her and the Somali community, and she wasn't quite sure what she was going to do with herself. And she was talking about, oh, I might do a master's, I might teach, I don't want to be an artist because they're all crazy. But what was her sense of Deptford? Again, I suppose that it was, she didn't want it to change, actually. She quite liked it as it was.
Quite a lot of people who think that.
But then I went to talk to a security guard at Lewisham College, who basically was telling a tale of Deptford in crisis, as far as he could see. You know, he was telling a tale of how it was getting poorer, there were less jobs, the people were drunks, were sort of sleeping in his just outside the door of Lewisham College more often. You'd see the people over there, but maybe that reflects the sort of security guard's view of what's going on, but he was saying the youth, Deptford weren't, there was no motivation, no sense of the future there, a sort of crisis talk, and then he got very enthusiastic about how he was going to come up with lots of ideas for me, how to sort of solve it all, and I tried to ring him and I went back to talk to him a couple of days later, and he wouldn't participate in anything
because
he was frightened, because someone had just been
murdered.
No,
really?
Because there's been three Lewisham College students killed in the last few months. And there's another one just happened recently, and he was decided that he was just going to put the shutters up and not. I asked him, "Well, who are you afraid of?" And he was there was no they. Yeah, it was just this general sense of something unpleasant going on out there. So quite diverse. Mm. And then the arts people I talked to, and the sort of small business arts people, seem to be quite, there is that sense of buoyancy or hope there. They there was that New York Times article about Deptford, wasn't there? And did you see that?
No.
There was
how long ago was that?
No, not long ago.
Recently.
Yeah.
No, I haven't seen it.
The New York Times saying Deptford was a new sort of hip,
oh, really?
Frontier land.
That's handy.
Place
yeah.
to come and see things. Yeah.
Gosh.
And
so
then
New York Times, that will be online somewhere.
Yes.
Yeah, there is. If you look.
So you
it up.
Think within the last. 3 months.
3 months. And then there's interestingly, there's a Daily Telegraph response to that article saying, Deptford citizens confused by New York Times article, isn't Deptford a dump? Kind of rather sort of conservative, yeah, as you might expect.
Mm. Well, I mean, I think the point at which I either came in or went out is what was mentioning the High Street, and as I understand it, the High Street has won awards for being the High Street where you can get everything that you never knew you ever wanted, something like all pound shops and Asian grocers and things like that. So what was you now have my full attention as long as the paving stones keep the builders occupied. So just to loop back, what's your purpose? What's your kind of big plan?
Well, there's a little plan and a big plan
right
now.
Tell me the big one first and then focus it down.
It's a bit vague, but as I was saying, you know, the council have got Theodore Zeldin in to talk about how, because they know he's been doing stuff with Conversation and these events that we've done. And he did a reinventing IKEA thing in IKEA in Cardiff, which is, I suppose, broadly speaking, about how consumerism might develop into something more interesting and culturally involved.
Right.
So he did that, and then he's done these big conversation events where he gets strangers to come and talk to each other one-on-one and get to know each other. Developing.
That's unusual.
he's been developing these portraits of people, which grows out of a sort of academic approach, but the idea is you would use them to allow people to get more in-depth introductions to each other.
Right.
So
what do you mean, sort of Studs Terkel type oral history?
Well, I was trying to get away from oral history. It follows a list of universal topics that come out of Theodore's book.
Okay, I mean, at that point I'd say if you've got, because I mean I'm used to, one, this is sort of within my field of expertise as a, 40 years of professional study of communication, I say that his Zeldin's name rang bells because I knew that I'd picked up this. I think the first thing I'd seen of this was that book that I picked up in Waterstones, certainly sometime within the last 10 years. But if there's something you think that I should look at to get kind of the essence of what this method is about, I'd be grateful, and that might. So you don't need to explain maybe quite so much. I mean, is there, apart from the book I mentioned, I don't know, is there something online or is there something on your website? Because I haven't actually had a chance to go and look at what you've got up there. Is there something which summarises what the philosophy and...
Well, it's a bit hard, it's a bit nebulous. It's better just to sort of have a look at the Oxford Muse website, I think.
Okay. So
there's an ideas section there that has some of Theodore's writings on.
What website is this?
Oxfordmuse.com.
Oxford News, and that's on your flyer.
Oxfordmuse.com. But his intellectual approach, An Intimate History of Humanity, is the book that would sort of show where he's coming from most recently and most depth.
So did you broker the meeting with, were you a student of his or something, or were you just?
Yeah, well, I bumped into him in Oxford, and then since then I've been doing things.
Right, but you were a student. In Oxford at the time?
I was, yeah. Not anymore. Yeah.
Well, what was your subject?
Sociology.
Okay, good. Good. Good choice. So, but was the Feast of Conversation your idea or your idea developed with him?
Well, he's done them. He has done these big conversation dinners before, so he's done them all over the world.
Right.
Whoever or commission is interested, but we did do one at the Hayward Gallery for 200. That was a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And then got us, yes, this one in East London. So they are they're an established forum, I suppose.
Okay.
But
I couldn't say that I've got anything like that, but I would say that I ran an exercise to open a conference in 1990 was International World Literacy Year. And at the beginning of January that year, I was asked to open or provide an exercise to open the World Assembly that got together to launch the year, right? So it took place in Bangkok, in Thailand, of course. There were well over 1,000 people involved, and I had the task of getting strangers to talk to one another when we had 100 different countries represented and I don't know how many language groups. And
I imagine that was quite tricky.
It was one of my bigger challenges, but I mean it happened. One of the things was that, of course, I'm used to running exercises in large groups where I get people to, and so the idea is, how do you get to tap into what subcultures and groups and interests are represented in a large mass of people? And you do that by, well, one of the simplest methods is hands up. So hands up all those people who, you know, who live here, hands up those people who've travelled X hundred miles. So you start to see the patterns. I prefer to do these sorts of things in a large flat space where people can move around, so into the middle, all those people who've done X. So, yeah, that is the sort of thing that I typically do. I'll do a conference opener in order to set the tone for a conference as a learning event and trying to get people. Anyway, I mean, people talk about the sort of exercise I do sometimes as icebreakers, which I take as not a very helpful title, because I think people, you know, well, what's, you know, icebreaker?
It's
trivial,
yeah.
Whereas I think it's much, much more important than that. So often the sort of events that I've run have involved groups forming at the beginning of the conference, which then do work throughout the conference. And some of the work might be organising a conference cabaret, which used to be one of my specialisms, to, you know, forming a group which is going to be talking about learning in the workplace. But, you know, typically a conference will bring together, you know, at least hundreds and possibly thousands of people from all over the world. That's a really valuable opportunity, which in my view a lot of conference organisers, you know, it's the facilitation. I think I'm trying to say to you that I think, without hearing too much more, that I would probably share with you a lot of intentions, but my methodology and my size of operation has clearly been somewhat different from Professor Zeldin. So that my feasts of conversation are pretty chaotic in one sense, in that I'd like to have people moving around and a lot of talk that isn't directed by me. So I'm not keen on static around. I think it's really useful sometimes to start off with pair work, but then you can do all sorts of things. You know. So, you know, a version of speed. I'd say I was doing an academic version of speed dating long before the term was coined, but so I'm getting people to do that.
Well, this is sort of slow dating.
Yeah.
What we do, and it's very much about persons, individuals getting to know each other.
Right.
Over
you see,
a
my
of time
my interest, my
in
way into this has always been in
the
group rather than in. I'm not a psychologist. I'm a sociologist, so my interest is more in the group. But having said that, you know, in years running things like the Group Relations Training Association, which was the national body that used to promote tea group training in this country. I think we established that you hadn't heard that. Yes, years of that I've been taken through more personal development than I care to mention, despite the fact I was, you know, kicking and screaming. I used to make a very strong classification between education and therapy, and I think I've come to a recognition that it's not quite so clear-cut as I think, and indeed you have to work at the level of the individual, the small group, and the social, because ultimately my goals have always been cast in terms of widespread social change. Yeah. So, you know, I've had this mission for a long time. I'm now going into probably last phase of it. I reckon I've got about 10 good years. So I've now sorted out what I want to do in that time, and I hope that, you know, our collaboration might be part of that. I do think it's really important to start getting people to talk to one another. I was saying to Roger in the car yesterday that, my field of practice, I've said it one time, was the T group, or the work that I do in groups is based on a methodology, a particular method. But there are lots of parallel experiences with T groups where people have intensive, in the Big Brother house or in any sort of cultural island, people create a culture which can make all sorts of remarkable things happen when groups start to work. And often I think people think they've got an individual purchase on that. The Burning Man organisation certainly thinks that they have something very special indeed that I would say is much more common than they realise. Anyway, where was I? Yeah, I was saying to Rob that if people have been in a T group laboratory together, even if they might not have got on to start with, by the end, usually what happens in a group of 50 or so participants is that people will have a new perception of themselves, but also of other people in the group and the way that that all fits together. That is, you know, just about universally reported as a reaction at the end of an event like that. One problem is always the application of it. So how do you take, so, you know, people are sent to these sorts of events to learn to be better managers, or I've done it with, goodness knows, waitresses and waiters in motorway service areas in the past. But the idea is to improve communication, usually with some view of applying it in the workplace. People usually come back from these sorts of things high as a kite and full of, you know, intentions to change their life or the way they work together. The problem is sustaining that operation afterwards.
Mm.
But certainly I think even though that immediate euphoria and, you know, ecstasy kind of effect wears off quite quickly, I still think it will be very difficult for people who had shared that kind of experience to point guns at one another, to shoot one another. And ultimately that's sort of bottom line for me. And I see it as, you know, that important, that I think this is a contribution to world peace. Anyway, that's, yes, I also sort of fired up by this idea, decided that I'd try and run the world's first tea group in cyberspace. And the interesting thing was, I wrote to 20 people last night, went to bed, and by the time I got up this morning, I had 4 instant replies saying, yes, count me in. And I was thinking about, you know, the days when I used to run these things in regular space, it would probably have taken a month just to get to that point, just to have, you know, 4 people signed up, and I can do it while I'm sleeping. So there's kind of magic about that. So certainly I'm interested in how we apply, you know, what we know about face-to-face communication and what's best about it, and take that into cyberspace, the Second Life, to Facebook, to wherever. And, you know, I think whatever you say about corporate giants and the evils of Google, or, you know, the downsides of Google, this is a time like no other for starting to make a difference. Anyway, what's the best thing that you could get from us or from me?
Well, I suppose there's some quite specific. I'm talking to Rebecca about essentially, because the big picture, I suppose, the council have called us up, and the big picture is about from the council's point of view at least, about how they might establish better relationships, conversations with people who live in Deptford.
Right.
Both so that they have, because the impression you get at the moment is that the council, and they're aware of this, that these state entities are very impersonal.
Mm-hmm.
They're not set up to know
yeah.
people. But then if you consider that the 21st century is basically a bit more about network and connectivity,
mm-hmm.
communication, conversation,
yeah.
the creativity of the mind of what happens when ideas get together, and also the capacity to act on ideas much more quickly, know
mm-hmm.
people more, then the way the state is set up is the opposite of that.
Sure.
Incredibly bureaucratic,
yeah.
technocratic, slow, top-down, nothing feeds up very easily at all.
Well, and I think the general state of many people's attitude towards anyone who's a professional politician is
yeah.
problematic at the moment.
As well.
For
yeah.
reasons that yeah, are pretty obvious.
There's a lot of frustration there. And also, I suppose, a sense that what the state really does is it takes money off you, or if you're lucky, it gives some money to you.
Yeah.
And doesn't do much more than that. So
yeah.
most people don't particularly like it, or they're neutral, because it's sort of, you can go swimming, but you have to pay your bills.
Yeah.
And then a few people quite like it because it gives them a handout, or yeah, it supports
mm.
something they're doing. And so that's the big picture of how, but the council, I suppose, are also, Lewisham Council, and you also to be quite interested in how you try and, well, explore how a council can facilitate the people of Deptford getting together, knowing each other,
mm-hmm.
discovering one another, but with a view to sorting out their own issues and problems
mm-hmm.
together, rather than the council
going
over there somewhere
yeah.
feeling that it needs to try and do everything itself
yeah.
in a rather detached and often rather expensive and slow kind of way.
Right. Can I ask a question about Lewisham Council? Do you know, I mean, one thing I don't know is how far people in Lewisham Council, say, talk to people in Newham. Is there much cross-fertilisation across the Greater London boroughs, do you know?
I get the feeling ahead of strategy, for example, that Lewisham does talk to those people at
mm-hmm.
that level.
It's just that I did a lot of work with Newham when I ran the Festival of Lifelong Learning. That was around 2000.
Right.
And I was working with a guy called Norman Dex. I think I mentioned this. He had three seasons title. I think he was head of culture, community and communication. Wonderful combo. So one of the things that I hosted at UEL, and indeed designed for Lewisham, for Newham, was an event. It was not open to the public. It was stakeholders from a whole lot of different groups, and what Newham wanted to do was to get input into their cultural strategy document. So they'd done a lot of groundwork. But you know, one of the things that, well, probably the biggest issue for Newham, certainly at the time that I was talking to them, was interracial strife, or you know, conflict between different ethnic communities, because Newham is fantastically diverse. I mean, it has extraordinary statistics about how many nationalities and language groups are represented, but also it's a very young population. Someone is very skewed in that direction. It's also got all the sort of indices of deprivation in terms of unemployment levels, low incidence of progression to higher education, all those sorts of things. So it's wanting to address that, but in particular it was the whole thing about gun crime and fights in the street. So I mean, there's been quite certainly, Newham was consulting with quite a few people at UEL at different levels. So there was one of the sociology professors there, it's called Phil Cohen, who you might even, whose work, I mean, Phil's the sort of person who would probably know Theodore Zell.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, he moves in that kind of slightly rarefied circle from the old days. But Phil has done some very interesting work based on interviews with school kids, say, on their perceptions of places of safety and danger. So that, sort of map of, this bunch of kids are saying, this is a perfectly safe way to that bus stop, and then they cross over here, and
mm.
that's where the fights happen. And it's, what became clear was that it was often the paths where, say, there were two schools, and I don't know, the kids would converge that particular point, and that's where the Sikhs and the Hindus or whatever will
territorial
fight with one another. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's that sort of thing going on, which I think some people in the council, at least, were inclined to take notice of in terms of actually learning from academic research. Other people, of course, are very impatient with that. But anyway, what I was leading up to was that I thought one of the events that we hosted at UEL, that was the discussion of the cultural strategy document, was very interesting, because what they used was they brought in a keypads for everybody there, so you could vote instantly on, you know, they put up a list of things and ask everybody there to say instantly, you know, which was their most important concern. You know, they're more concerned with waste management or cultural events for minorities. And it was very interesting, because I participated in that as well as organised it in part, and it was just seeing those kinds of things come up instantly, because you see,
they
immediately.
Doing very much the same sort of thing at the ward meetings.
Are they?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm just thinking there must be that sort of technology around that, you know, Lewisham should. Because probably at Newham they've took it all back in the cupboard and never used it since, because I think they brought it in for this particular purpose, you know, because they wanted to. And they wanted to be seen to.
Consultation.
Yeah, I mean, it was partly a sort of PR thing, because I'm sure they've got quite a lot of the document written, but they wanted to, you know, certainly be able to say they consulted widely and these were the priorities that people had gone for. But certainly within that sort of event, it was, well, I mean, I was just quite surprised at, again, how consistent some of the patterns were in terms of what people wanted, and I think some of it quite surprised the Newham people who, you know, again, if you don't live in a particular area.
They talk to people.
It's like, I mean, Rod and I worked for years with broadcasters, and you get extraordinary things. People, people who make TV programmes, but never actually talk to the potential audience for them. So we used to get broadcasting executives who'd base a whole argument on the fact that, I was recently in hospital, and, you know, the woman who cleaned the wards was telling me this is, like, you know, first time he's actually been confronted by a working class person directly. But anyway, interesting territory. So did you fix up this? Did you link up Lewisham with Zeldin, or was that?
They came to him,
Right.
Head of communications. There's a woman called Jane, I think, came to him as someone they knew was sort of involved in this.
And what's your payoff for this? Are you doing this as part of a study, or are you making money from it? Or?
No, I suppose, at some point we hope to get some money out of someone for it.
But there's something wrong with that.
But no, it's not a kind of money spinner.
So do
and
you
the
have
council got, I mean, they're having to cut their budget by 25% since the election, so it's not a gravy train of budgets. And they have to be a bit careful with council in a recession spending money on conversations. You know.
Yeah.
Imagine the Daily Mail will have a field day with people who can't get a new leg or something.
There's been far too much political strategy of late that's gone into concern about what the Daily Mail writes. I think, you can't control that and shouldn't even bother
to
try.
No, exactly. I suppose just how you package it.
I recognise that. So do you have a day job that's completely separate from you?
No, this is what I'm doing at the moment. Essentially a kind of retainer in theatre, which means I don't have to work. But the idea is I'm supposed to be developing or helping him to develop projects which would bring in more income. So,
what nationality is he?
He's born in England, was he? But Zeldin is Russian Jewish.
Yeah, that's what I was guessing.
I think his parents were Russian Jewish, but I think his father moved to London, and Theodore was basically brought up, I suppose, as a sort of English gent. The view to integration and whatnot.
So I'm just wondering, does he have a following in the States? Does he have a?
I'm not sure. France is actually where he's got more connections, because the French were quite. He was on Sarkozy's economic commission recently as a sort of token intellectual, And what else was he on?